John McCarthy is on the line from Southern California, and horrendous story. And as you said, as we went to the break, you've had many other incidents. And for lack of a better term, I guess we call this Black Project operations.
These were Black Terror operations. False flag operations is another term for it. We were engaged in activities where we were blaming the North Vietnamese government for activities which were occurring in Cambodia in the hopes that the Cambodian government would eventually take action to refuse the North Vietnamese from using their country as sanctuaries and for the movement of material and supplies into South Vietnam.
Now, when we talk about false flag operations, we talk about your career. It brings up 9/11 and some other subjects which we'll talk about here in a minute. But first of all, why did they want you out of the way, or what was behind this prosecution?
Well, first of all, I would not fall on my sword and admit that I had shot this person, because I hadn't. And it turns out that since this was an illegal operation in violation of presidential directives, these people had their egos involved, and it's not real clear whether or not the people in Saigon who were actually directing these operations were even themselves aware of the NSC meeting.
In other words, someone back in Washington probably took up on themselves to take all of you guys out in the field out of the loop.
Well, that's the way it turned out. Now, one of the State Department officials contacted one of my military lawyers in June of 1966 while I was recently arrived in Kansas. And he wanted a copy of the record of trial and all the Allied paperwork, which was provided to him. He took it back to the State Department, and within 10 days it was returned with a comment from the same State Department official, whose name I don't know. Had we known that this information was going to be discussed, we would have never let this go to trial. So this was an ego thing amongst the CIA folks who were actually operating outside the directives. This thing was a top secret corps marshal. There were very few people who knew everything that happened in that room except myself and the attorneys and the judge. In fact, the judge just passed away, and a couple of years ago a friend of mine called him on the phone back in Tennessee, and he was a defense attorney back there and a retired colonel, and he told him that he had a couple of questions about the McCarthy case, which, of course, had been overturned. And the judge says, by what right was that conviction overturned? Of course, because he was the presiding judge.
Mm-hmm.
And my associate told him that that Dr. Mason had recanted his testimony. And, of course, he was speechless, and he was, and his comments were related that he was really upset with the way this thing was conducted, because as it turned out, I was the first man ever convicted of premeditated murder, and the jury decided that they would sentence me to life in prison. And when the judge asked them if that was their complete sentence with respect to reduction in rank, dismissal from the service, and forfeiture of pay and allowances, they said, no, you said that life was a minimum, and that's what we gave him.
So you still were on the payroll?
Absolutely. I drew full pay and allowances for the entire period of time that I was in Leavenworth. But, of course, I sent that home to my wife and family. But because there wasn't much to spend it on there,
of course, well, of course,
needed to survive. But when I was released in October of 1969, 6 days after President Nixon dismissed the charges against Colonel Rowe and seven other Green Berets who were charged with the same station chief in Saigon for the CIA, said that there was no reason for the CIA not to testify at trial because they'd already testified in mine, so precedent had been set. The only problem with that is that everybody who swore the oath at my trial swore that they were members of the United States Army, so we've even got perjury thrown in there. So some of the people who swore that they were members of the United States Army were actually CIA. And those of us who were actually Army had been working for the CIA undercover. So that's how convoluted it got.
So in other words, they did all of this really treating you rotten, even though you had been a good soldier, simply just to cover their ass.
That's right. It was an ego problem, CIA problem. And of course, it all backfired. It took 30 years for it to backfire, big time, but I mean, it backfired within 3 years when we found the letter of recantation. And of course, that resulted in the charges being dismissed and a letter being written by General Westmoreland, a general order being written by him saying that all rights, privileges, and property that were removed as a result of the finding and the sentence would be restored. Well, that's fine, but you can't replace family. Once family's gone, that's it. And you can't replace the time.
Yeah, you're sitting there in prison. There's nothing you can do about that.
So that's just waiting. They never even said they were sorry. They didn't say thank you. They just said, well, you're going to be assigned to the...
Did you go ahead and stay in the service?
Oh, no. As soon as the charges were dismissed, I put in my letter of resignation with the qualification that I no longer had a desire to serve as an officer in the United States Army, period. And they granted my wish, and I left the service in August of 1969.
So what have you been doing the last 37 years or so?
I've found out that along the way, that there's not much you can do with respect to seeking redress, which is kind of guaranteed by our First Amendment. And our forefathers decided that seeking redress against the government for redresses was pretty damn important, and they put it in the First Amendment. Well, in 1950, Uncle Sam, in violation of the First Amendment, which says Congress shall make no laws, decided that they would adopt the Ferries Doctrine, F-E-R-E-S, which means that there no individual who is in the military service may take civil action or tort action against any member of the United States government. So those of us who don our country's uniform to go off to fight wars automatically forfeit our rights under the First Amendment to begin with. And not a lot of folks know about that, but I put that on my website so that those being recruited to go off to fight, you know, wars of liberation, etc., are aware that what they're really giving up once they say, I do. So these are the things and the elements and actually the basics of the reasoning for this website, which I've just about coming up on 800,000 visitors, many of which are from the East Coast and some of the agencies that are located there.
Yeah, I understand that.
Because my stat counter...
We look at our stats occasionally, and there's a lot of strange hits all of a sudden from Vienna, Virginia, and other places.
You get them from all over Virginia. You know, and State Department, too, right out of Washington, D.C., and FBI, and the rest of those, you know, jackbooted thugs.
Yep. And I understand what you're saying there. It seems that we are operating with a lot of thugs using mafia tactics under government.
Well, we thought we got rid of that with Nixon. And in actuality, I can actually believe that since this stuff is so compartmented that many folks don't know who, in fact, that they're working for. As a prime example, in 1962, we had teams returning to Germany from Iran, Iraq, Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, Lebanon, Turkey, and Greece. And I was in a position to know where these folks had been working and with whom. And one of the people who came back from Lebanon wrote to his father, who was then the Army Chief of Staff, General Goodpaster. And Billy wrote to his dad and told him what he had done and where his sister teams came from. And he took that letter into the next meeting of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and he said, "Hey, I didn't know we had Americans in all these countries." Well, 3 days later, we got a letter from SOTFI, which is a Special Operations Task Force Europe in Frankfurt, which is the CIA, directing the commanding officer of the 10th Special Forces in Germany to order Billy Goodpaster not to write his father any more letters about our operations in Europe, North Africa, or the Middle East. So that's when the light went on for me, that the Pentagon didn't know what the hell we were doing. And the same thing was happening in Vietnam. So we were an element of the United States government that actually was operating in a rogue status in many places all over the world.
That,
I think it's still going on.
Yeah, of course it is. It appears, and you would know more than me probably, appears that maybe it's even more refined and more more of a, you know, the left hand not knowing what the right hand is doing.
Well, I think this is what I commend when you talked about the military-industrial complex.
Yeah, I think you're probably right, too, and I think many of the military things today are being done by privatization.
Well, that's another bad thing. Now, these were semi-privatization things that happened in Vietnam. Like, we had individuals working as civilians under the direct control of a civilian agency, the United States government, conducting activities which were illegal under U.S. law, international law, military law, and the laws of the country we were invading. So, you've got to...
And it's even worse today, I'm sure.
Well, it is, because now we've got these contractors which are think that they're operating under blanket immunity because the heavy contractor and the payee is the CIA. And they're not. They're all subject to judicial action just the same as the rest of us. Well, these are the crimes that, you know...
Something needs to be done about.
Well, you know, this, we've got to take something in hand here. If, you know, the initial law which organized and brought it to being the National Security Act of 1947 is so far different from what we have today without any laws being passed to to change what was put on the books in 1947, which established the CIA and the National Security Council, etc., and how they were supposed to function. And it's turned out that the thugs that eventually or initially took over these organizations were veterans from World War II, who were used to operating under the OSS auspices, which answered to nobody. And they had their 007 cards, and that's what they continued to operate under. But the United States, of course, was at peace and was not the aggressor nation. However, it turns out that we are. We have got interventions all over the damn world. And I've dedicated a portion of my website to just those activities.
I noticed that. Let's talk a little bit about 9/11 here. What do you think happened?
Well, when I got out of the service, I joined the police department in Miami, Florida, knowing full well that they would not hire me because of my past. Well, it turns out that they did hire me, even though my FBI rap sheet hit town 6 weeks into the six-month course at the police academy. And I showed them the order from General Westmoreland saying that all rights and privileges, blah, blah, blah. And so they kept me on. And I figured that they'd fire me, and then I'd have an excuse to sue them for, to sue the government because of the screw-up
right.
That occurred while I was in the military. Well, it turns out, well, I I arrested the wrong man about 4 years later. It was Janet Reno's gynecologist. And he had committed a couple of felonies in assaulting me because he was irritated with the fact that I was dating a certain lady. And so I arrested him, and she wasn't going to prosecute him. So I said, well, if you're not going to prosecute him, I'm not going to arrest him. And so I decided that it was time for me to leave. So then I went into to mining and engineering and heavy construction and got back on my saddle and toured around the world and saw things. In fact, I operated in a mining operation in Nicaragua during the late 70s just as the Sandinistas were taking over from the Nicaraguan government. So I got to see that action down there.
And that wasn't very pretty.
No, it wasn't. In fact, the reason that the Contra War failed was because the United States, in its wisdom, decided to hire all of the former Guardia Nacional soldiers who worked for Somoza, who were suppressive to the Nicaraguan people. And when they came back into the country, armed to the teeth with all the proceeds from all the cocaine, drugs, and everything else that the Ollie North and the Enterprise had brought in, that the Nicaraguan people wouldn't have anything to do with them. They wouldn't support the Contras because they had been so suppressive to them when they were the Guardia Nacional, and they didn't forget it. So without popular support, forget the fact that they would have won the war.
Hey, let's get back to 9/11. What do you make of that?
Well, I wanted to say...
You're going to be out of the country here for about 6 weeks, and our series on 9/11 is going to start here pretty soon.
Okay. The reason I mentioned going into the police department is because a good homicide investigator always asks Kimono, who benefits from this homicide? And we have to ask the same thing for 9/11, and I've dedicated a portion of my site to Kimono, benefits for 9/11, 7/7, etc. And when you look at it, you can see the information is totally available, but suppressed by the mainstream media, that there are people in the government today who benefited from 9/11. The fact that there was controlled demolitions, and this is an inescapable fact, because there's so much evidence of controlled demolitions, and some of it might even have been nuclear. I just finished up being a member of the Citizens Grand Jury of San Diego, and we indicted George Bush et al. For mass murder of 9/11. And we did that on the 14th of April.
Now you had evidence presented?
Yes, evidence was presented during a nine-hour session, and we in turn indicted George Bush, Dick Cheney, on down the line, including the military people who supported this and went along with it, and including Silverstein, who collected $7.5 billion. Giuliani for mass murder.
The Motorola radio thing alone.
Oh, absolutely. All this stuff was presented to us, plus a lot of the members of the grand jury had foreknowledge. We were asked to come and become members of this citizens' grand jury, which is part of the Constitution. And all of us had some knowledge and experience and had studied 9/11 and read as much as we could. And, of course, a lot of it was information that we found online because the mainstream media will not produce this information.
And why do you think that is?
Well, because the mainstream media is the ones that really controls this country.
I agree with you that statement. I've been in the media for 45 years. And basically, I think they are guilty as much as anybody that put the mini nukes in there, or the controlled demolition, or whatever happened. I think by not reporting the facts, they're accessories.
Well, I think because
they're enablers.
What about the disinformation they put out, Jerry? I mean, they put out really horrifically bad information with respect to what was going down, even at the process of the 9/11 factor. Dan Rather. they put out the fact that this looked like controlled demolition live on CBS. And he was fired shortly thereafter. And a lot of these people were saying, no, this. All of a sudden, these experts appeared out of nowhere saying, no, this was from the fire and the steel melted and blah, 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 which is impossible.
Right. Now, reason I'm bringing this up, we only have about 5 minutes left. We're going to do another show about this in great detail when you get back. But the reason I'm bringing this up is you have a history of working in highly compartmentalized operations where people really didn't know what the other people were doing, as we laid out in the first part of the story. Surely there's somebody in the media, in the mainstream media, that has a conscience. I mean, Rosie O'Donnell just got their contract not renewed today. But the point is, anytime somebody says something about 9/11, they seem to disappear.
Well, they do. And, of course, none of us get out of this life alive. And I've been fortunate to be around for 64 years, and I'm not afraid of anything. Although I'm not going to stand out in front of a bus.
Yeah, right. There's a difference between fear and being logical.
But my mother always said to wear clean underwear, you might get hit by a bus.
My mother told me to. That explains our no fear genes.
Well, I'll tell you, I'd be happy to come back and get into this further, Jerry. I would encourage people to take a look at the 9/11 section of that site. And
John, what are we going to do? Who are we going to get to talk?
Well, you know, once we start indicting, and when the indictments come down, there'll be people who will be shaking in their boots who are still alive today, even from back in 66. So when we can get all of these folks. In fact, we could. What I suggest.
Well, there's no statute of limitations on murder.
None. And what I suggested at the Citizens Grand Jury in San Diego is that we use extraordinary rendition for these people that we're indicting. I think we could get some quick answers. And since it's our money and we're sending people.
Is there any attorney general, U.S. attorney, anybody with the power of a subpoena in Congress that we can get mobilized?
Well, if we can, you can count on the mainstream media to be against it, because these are the guys who elect our presidents. The mainstream media controls this country, and that's why the people in power defer to the media all the time.
Well, John, we're out of time here, but the picture you paint through experience is not a pretty one.
Well, I'm sorry. It's the truth.
Yeah, I know it is. And people, it amazes. We only got about a minute left, but when I talk about these things, people say to me, well, I can't imagine my government doing this, or I can't imagine the police department doing this, or I can't imagine the military doing this. Well, I can't imagine them not doing it. Human nature is human nature.
Yeah, well, I think we just scratched the surface, Jerry. If we had about 20 hours, we might get a lot of it in.
Well, we're gonna talk to you again when you get back from Germany. Be careful.
All right.
We'll talk to you later, John.
Thanks, Jerry.
Okay, bye. Jim Mars on 9/11.
If we use the ability to electronically capture airplanes and fly them by remote control against the wishes of anybody on board, and if we crash those planes into your buildings and you got double indemnity and, you know, more money out of them than they're worth, and we could use that as an excuse or provocation to start a war, hey, this would take care of everything.
Over the next few months, we are going to bring to the public the ugly face of what really happened on 9/11 and who is behind it.
Some senators have described this as a second Pearl Harbor.
There have been many excellent documentaries on 9/11. Many of these documentaries have uncovered much of the hidden secrets behind the story.
That have been planned for at least a year.
On our series, we're going to attempt to put a face on all of this. The people. Why they did it. Who did it?
We are not exactly sure at the moment of the whereabouts of the Secretary of Defense.
We will attempt to bring you the facts, plain and simple. our 9/11 series, we'll name the names. We'll tell you who did it. And we'll present the evidence to back up that story. 9/11, now on the Jerry Pippin Show.